You're listening to the Co-Main Event Podcast. And now your hosts, Ben Folks and Chad Dundas.
That's right. You're listening to another episode of the Co-Main Event Mixed Martial Arts Podcast. I'm Chad Dundas. That's Ben Folks. We're both longtime MMA journalists, and for nearly the last 11 years, we've been meeting here every week to break down all the action in the wild, weird, and occasionally wonderful world of mixed martial arts. Ben, the UFC was down Kansas City way this past weekend. And, I mean, it was an interesting night. We saw Max Holloway reaffirm his greatness. We saw some retirements. We saw some fake retirements. We'll talk about all that coming up on this show. Plus, as everyone knows, the heavyweight division continues to plug along with next week's UFC main event. And I guess some continued uncertainty about Jon Jones and Stipe Miocic and all that. But first, before we get into any of that, undoubtedly the biggest news of the weekend, Ben, I'm just going to read you a headline, and I know you have already posted about it on Twitter, but I just want to get your response here.
Okay.
Ex-WWE wrestler John Morrison calls out KSI after brutally knocking out Harley Morenstein at Creator Clash 2.
Those aren't real people. None of those can be real people.
That's not a real thing either, right? Creator Clash 2. Creator Clash 2 sounds like a place you and I could get ourselves into a fist fight.
We'll totally beat the shit out of you at Creator Clash 3. I'll tell you that right now.
Oh, I was thinking maybe we would team up. That we would team up against someone else, not you and I coming to blows in the simmering feud that we have had over the last 11 years of doing this podcast.
Who buys a ticket to go see Creator Clash? That's what I want to know. Who out there is just like, you know what? Yeah, no, this seems like not only a good use of my time in this one precious life I have on Earth, but also a good use of my monies, yeah. My human monies. Let me buy a ticket to go see some creators clash in the boxing ring. That seems like a thing that I should absolutely be there for, and I'd just positively hate myself if I missed it.
So you got John Morrison. He goes out there and he fights, as I said, Harley Morenstein, who's a person that I have never heard of before. My guess is he is some manner of creator, given his participation in Creator Clash 2. Now, Ben, there was apparently a Creator Clash 1. Maybe that is the most surprising news out of all of this.
I feel like I did hear about Creator Clash 1. I also felt like what I heard did not make me think that there was going to be a 2. I didn't think that it was like the first installment of a thing. I thought it was just like, well, everybody's doing celebrity boxing. Let's try to dip our biscuit in some of that gravy while it's still hot. Didn't seem like it was going to be a franchise from what I heard.
Yeah.
It does seem like when I hear about just sort of like celebrity news these days, it all sounds like this to me, this headline. It's just a jumble of names and some things that may be names but also may just be abbreviations, and I don't know what any of it is, and it's scary. It's frightening to me as an old man in this world.
Yeah. John Morrison knocks out Harley Morenstein, and then he jumps on the mic, and you can tell he's got a little training. You can tell he's got a little training on the mic here. But he says, when I'm thinking about who to call out, Jake, Logan... No, Jake got beat. Logan got beat by KSI, which is why I'm going to put KSI on blast right now. You can tell that he used to work for WWE with how hard he leans into right now. It's just like it punctuates the whole promo. He's been to school.
I have a technical question here. Is it enough to say I'm putting somebody on blast if I wanted to put you on blast, do I just say, Chad Dundas, I'm putting you on blast, and is it done? Like, is the contract sealed at the time that I finish that sentence, or do I have to then further say other things, or flip it the other way? I've heard people be like, oh, this so-and-so put so-and-so on blast. They didn't actually say I'm putting you on blast. They were just basically talking shit. Like, that's kind of what I thought it was. Now it feels like it's a little bit more of an official designation, like, you know, I demand satisfaction. The modern equivalent is, I'm putting you on blast now.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's a great question that I had not considered, whether or not putting someone on blast is a descriptor of something else, or whether or not it is the whole noun. Like, it is the thing that is being done, is that you are putting someone on blast. That's, we're going to have to, it's going to take a lexicographer of more renown than you and I to figure out this particular language jumble jamble.
And, or failing that, a young person. Yeah, a young person a young will person. Have to explain it to us.
So, it doesn't, like you said, a feeling somewhat removed from the news, the celebrity news, etc. Doesn't this kind of shit where you see the fact that there was a thing called Creator Clash 2 and that John Morrison fought a guy that neither of us have ever heard of before, and then he called out KSI of all people? It makes me feel like there is an entirely different combat sports universe happening that we don't know anything about. That it's like we're over here in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and John Morrison is knocking out Harley Morenstein, who, for all I know, is one of the greats over in the other universe.
Come on,
maybe Harley Morenstein like is 19th. The Anderson Silva of the other universe, and I've just never heard of it before, because that's the DC Cinematic Universe over there.
First of all, that dude sounds like a 1940s talent agent. Like, who'd have a little office somewhere on the Upper West Side, and you'd go in there and be like, Harley Morenstein, I heard you'd make me a star. And he's like, ah, you're going all the way, kid. But are you saying there's a chance that at some point, hence, I will have a conversation with somebody and I will mention being into combat sports, and they'll be like, oh, shit, yeah, I follow combat sports. And I'll be like, oh, cool, maybe I'm about to make a new friend. And then they'll be like, yeah, man, I watched Creator Clash 1, Creator Clash 2. Like, I've been deep in that shit. And then I just go, oh, dear God. It's happened. There's been a rift. The two timelines have diverged and will never meet again.
Can you believe Harley Morenstein knocked out VWC 44 Flockety Flock? I never would have imagined that happened.
No way. No way.
Remember, you're listening to the Co-Main Event Podcast proper. This show drops every Monday afternoon for free in your timelines and podcast libraries. And if you're listening right now, friends, I need you to do two things. First, go subscribe to the show. No matter if you're listening on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or any other platform, just go in there right now. I'm telling you, just click the subscribe button. That way the podcast shows up in your feed automatically every week, and you don't even have to think about it, man. It's just right there for the enjoyment of your ears. Second, if you already subscribe and you like what you hear, go ahead and leave us a 5-star review over on whatever platform you listen to. That stuff really helps our visibility. It helps the podcast, and it helps push us into the future. As everyone knows, if you really want to support the show, you should go find us on Patreon. Ben Folks and I are over there pretty much all week churning out the additional MMA content. We run the Wednesday live chat where we take your questions for a full 60 minutes. We got Thursday's Doing the Damn Thing podcast, where we take a break from fighting and talk about pop culture. And we got Friday's Power Hour, a full extra hour of curated MMA talk to get you hyped for the weekend to come. We got a patronage tier for every budget. Head on over to patreon.com/co-main-event and sign up to join the team. Again, that's patreon.com/co-main-event. You can also scoop up some super dope CME merchandise. Just head over to our brand new merch shop, which you'll find over at comainevent.com, and you can check out old favorites like our original Dundasso t-shirt designs, the old school cowboy astronaut cigarettes merch, and you can also find new favorites like Are You Fucking Kidding Me shirts, licensed merchandise for the dreaded MMA gods, and of course the hottest seller on the market, the Bobby Nux t-shirt. Go to our website, comainevent.com, and click the link at the top of the page that says shop. We partner with our guys at Superconductor on the shop. They are a brand and design studio. We can't recommend them highly enough. For all your design needs, hit them up over at studiosuperconductor.com or on the grams at Studio Superconductor. We got music this week from our guy Dennis Pham. He is a self-described day one co-maniac from San Diego that writes a song about every few years. You can find his single, The Fire, on Spotify/Apple Music and all other streaming platforms. Ben, we got three rounds this week, as usual, in the co-main event. In round number one, Ben, what's that thing you always say about Arnold Allen?
That boy good.
That boy good. But Saturday night, Max Holloway? That boy, just a little bit better.
That boy better.
And in round number two, the big homie Nate Diaz will box the slightly bigger homie, physically speaking, Jake Paul in August. But will the bigger homie turn out to be too big for the big homie to compete with? Big fight, big questions, big money.
Could you tell that for sure?
Could you tell that last part was a question?
Yeah, your voice went up.
Big
and your
big
eyebrows
money?
For people watching the thing.
No, I tried to do the lilt at the end, big money, so people would know that it was a question.
You got a great lilt. I've always said this. I've always defended your lilt when it's come under question.
In round number three, that silly little guy, John Jones, teased us with retirement last week, but Dana White says everything is cool and he's still on track to fight Stipe Miocic sometime at some place to be named later. Meanwhile, Miami area private investigator Curtis Blades fights one of the UFC's interchangeable Sergeys this weekend. What next for the new look heavyweight division? All that plus are you fucking kidding me and just saying stuff, but first, like we always do about this time, let's do a little bit of listener mail.
Listener mail.
This week's listener mail is once again brought to you guys by NordVPN. We've been preaching the virtues of NordVPN for a long time now. Ben and I both have it installed on all of our devices. It's hassle-free and it works great with NordVPN. You get the fastest VPN on the planet. NordVPN provides online protection with a single click. Don't miss your favorite content. Even when you're traveling, stay at home virtually. Stay safe from malware with threat protection. Ben, I know you love NordVPN. I also know you were out of town this weekend down there in Southern California on a quote-unquote work trip.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have NordVPN rocking?
Man, you know I had NordVPN protecting me because my favorite thing about NordVPN is how it will kick on when you're on various public Wi-Fis, just making sure you don't even have to worry about it. Doesn't matter if you're at that one fish taco place that you remember going to when you were in college. Doesn't matter if you're at that one dive bar that you remember going to when you were in college. Doesn't matter if you're at that other bar that used to be a cool dive bar but now fucking sucks. NordVPN got you covered.
Wow. Sounds like you got a lot of work done down there, my man.
You know how it is. You go back to a town that you remember fondly from like 15 years ago, and then you're like, oh, okay, so you turned this cool-ass dive bar with duct tape on the seats into a bougie-ass wine bar, and I want to throw a brick through your window now.
Wow. Well, at least you were covered with NordVPN. If you want to get 4 free months instead of the usual 3 right now, if you use the sign-up link exclusively for CME listeners, you can. Every purchase of a 2-year plan will receive 4 bonus months on top of that when you go use nordvpn.com/comain or use the code comain when you sign up. That's all one word. Comain. This includes all the plans we always tell you about, and it's completely risk-free with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. Get your exclusive Nord VPN deal by going to nordvpn.com/comain or use the code comain. First piece of listener mail this week comes to us from our guy Matthew Cole Webb. He writes, Edson Barboza went full vintage mode on Billy Quarantillo. Need his fucking face off. Discourse if you nasty. Now, I saw this referred to as a y'all must have forgot performance by Edson Barboza, not to infringe on the gimmick of our guy Ariel Helwani over there at the MMA Fortnite. But, you know, maybe we do sleep on Edson Barboza a little bit there at the featherweight division. Ben, he's 37 years old, came into this fight on the heels of 2 straight losses to Giga Chikadze and Bryce Mitchell. Before that, he had won 2 but had a 3-fight losing streak back in 2019 and early 2020. Maybe we did forget about Edson Barboza a little bit. And then he goes in there in a measuring stick fight, in a fight where maybe if you're the UFC, matchmakers are hoping Billy Q comes out on top. And what he does is knocks him out with a knee straight to the grill, knocks him straight out.
Yeah, that was honestly a pretty good read on Edson's part to realize pretty early on, as soon as you get backed up against the fence, that guy's basically going to throw a punch and shoot. And he really only needed to see it once or twice to be like, all right, I know where he's going to be. And he manages to throw that knee while he is in the process of getting punched in the face, which is pretty impressive. Like, he eats one, but he knows that that means that Billy Q's head going to be right down there shooting for that takedown and just catches him perfectly coming right into it, knocks him out clean. And honestly, I think that people can look at Edson Barboza's age and maybe some of the recent losses and think, that's a guy on the downslope. But Edson Barboza has been a dangerous man for a while now, and especially in fights where, like, if you don't have an insurmountable grappling advantage over that guy where you can just avoid his stand-up game altogether, and you don't have a better, scarier stand-up game than he has, then you, just about anybody, could be in trouble against Edson Barboza, especially if he has a little bit of a reach advantage over you, which he often does, which he did here. Because it's like, you look at the losses to Bryce Mitchell and Giga Chikadze. I mean, we know that Chikadze is good as hell on the feet. That's a bad man right there. And Bryce Mitchell has a suffocating ground game when he can really get it going. And so Bryce Mitchell's a uniquely bad matchup for him. Chikadze is just a dude who's on the rise and looking to be one of the top dudes in that division. I think other people might look at it and be like, well, hey, just go out there, take the guy down, beat him up on the mat. It ain't that easy, man. It's not that easy to do.
Yeah, and you know who found that out? Billy Q this past weekend. I guess you can look at Edson Barboza's age, 37, if you want to, but you know what you can also look at? The body of a 25-year-old fitness influencer. This man looks good out there, Ben Folks. He's got an 18-pack going on down there in the midsection. Just, it's like he made a deal with the devil to get an elixir of youth, and he's sipping on it every night because Edson Barboza still looks like he's about, 19 years old. You go down the list here in these featherweight rankings, and I will tell you what, even when you get outside the top 10, it is a goddamn murderer's row. You got Calvin Kattar, Giga Chikadze, and Ilya Topuria, Mosar Ivolev. Those are the guys kicking around at 8, 9, 10. Even when you get outside the top 10, you got Bryce Mitchell, Sadiq Yusuf, Dan Ige, Edson Barboza, and Alex Caceres. That's awesome. It's like the 1921 Yankees right there from 1 to 15 if they were allowed to have 15 batters. But it's just a tough place to be right now, the 145 top 15.
Yeah, and it's also a place where you've got to probably win like 6 fights in a row for us to even notice you're there.
Yeah. Now, I'm going to read this email. It says, it's from Long Live Gunu. And it says, is there something to be said about gamblers and fans in general being too infatuated with the hot new prospect instead of relying on the tested/tried new veteran? For example, in the last few weeks, Rob Font, plus 170, Justin Gaethje, plus 188, Pedro Munhoz, plus 170, and Edson Barboza, plus 145, were all sizable underdogs in their matchups and all won either unanimously or by KO. Is there anything you guys are taking from this to apply to the future? Now there's that. There is that question to consider. But first, Ben, we must take a slight detour into the story of rapper Gunu.
Oh, no. Okay.
I sent you the link. Did you open it?
Oh, is that? I couldn't tell if that link was for the previous question or for this one.
Yeah, it'll take you to TMZ.com where the headline says, Rapper Gunu, corpse propped up in nightclub on display during funeral. And then you got two pictures. The rapper Gunu, unfortunately, tragically, 24-year-old, was killed recently. And what they have done here at his funeral is prop up his fully embalmed corpse in front of the crowd in a nightclub, fully dressed and wearing a crown.
Yeah, and that's like, it's an interesting choice too. Fully dressed, it seems like he's wearing a pair of khakis and a hoodie, basically. Like,
yep.
And a crown. Like kind of a princess crown. And just staring at you. It's they kind of weakened at Bernie's dim, and it seems, at least from the description in the article, like not everybody felt great about it.
You know what? I'm going to give the organizers of Gunu's funeral titled The Final Show. It's always great when your funeral has a title.
Yeah.
I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt that they know what Gunu would have wanted.
Yeah.
And maybe this was it. Maybe he would want to be propped up like a wax statue in front of a crowd at his funeral titled The Final Show.
Do you think, though, that there's a chance that he just, like, one night was just like, hey, when I die, Man, just prop me up in the club and, like, play my music and have one last final show. And people are like, hell yeah. And do you think that, like, he's looking down from the afterlife being like, I didn't mean that literally. That was just kind of like an attitude that I was trying to bring to my life. I didn't mean that you should actually do that, though. That's creepy now that I see it.
I assume these wishes were laid out in a legal document, a last will and testament signed by Gunu and witnessed by several, registrars and stamped with an official seal. And this is what we had to do, according to his last will and testament.
I also note here, he was shot in a suspected armed robbery and killed. Prince George's County PD is offering a $25,000 reward for any info that would lead to a conviction or arrest. Man, $25,000 somehow seems like a disappointing amount of money. You know, doesn't it?
Wow. Do we have to get into this about Gunu? He was just, you know, he's departed. He just passed out of this mortal coil to the big opening act show in the sky. Like, we really got to...
If I get murdered,
Gunu down now talking about the number of his reward.
I'm talking about the police basically offering that. If I expect this of you, and I'm going to say this right now so that everybody hears me. If I get murdered, Chad.
When you get murdered.
And the Missoula police are out there offering some kind of disappointing figure. I expect you personally to get out your checkbook and make sure that the offer gets up there. At least 50 grand. Come on. Yeah. 50 grand. Yeah. That'll make some people start thinking about saying something. 25 grand? I don't know.
On some real who is the Batman shit there where I'm going to dig out my checkbook and offer a personal reward. All right, let's talk about this actual question here. This is actually something I talked about on Wednesday with Dan Tom over behind the Patreon paywall when you were absent and he came in to guest host on the CME live chat where he said, and I don't want to, you know, Dan Tom, he knows more about technical analysis and MMA gambling than I do, for sure. So I don't want to put words in his mouth. But my recollection is that he said something to the effect of, when you see something like this, where you have a proven veteran going off as an underdog against a young up-and-coming fighter who is somewhat unproven, that is something to at least take a longer look at. Now, I don't know if you want to put your full bankroll down on it, but as Long Live Gunu writes here, you know, we've seen some very recent anecdotal evidence to suggest that sometimes you can catch a flyer on this type of bet.
You know what? And for an example of a similar kind of deal, I think you could look here on the prelims to see Brandon Royval and Mateus Nicolau, where that was one where when I was on a pre-fight show talking about some betting picks I liked, where Brandon Royval came into that as an underdog. And it seems like it's one thing to see somebody where you get excited about them coming up through the ranks and you go, this guy seems like he could be a really good fighter in this division. But I think sometimes we get excited on one hand about somebody's potential, what we think that they could turn into. And then on the other hand, we look at somebody else who has been up through the ranks and maybe faced some of the top guys and maybe lost to some of the top guys. And we go, all right, we've seen what we need to see. And we sort of make up our minds about them in a way that's premature and unfair. And we do it a lot in MMA all the time. We love to just say, okay, we got the book on this guy. And, you know, not going to advance beyond this certain point. And I think that, like, it's understandable why we do it, because we want to feel like we know what's going on. And like we also, it's very easy for us to get excited about somebody who we haven't seen look vulnerable yet. Somebody who we've seen look like they're really good and that it's easy to imagine them continuing to get better and better. But we also sometimes discount the value of some of that experience that fighters may have gotten in some of those big fights. And we think like, okay, just because if you fought the top dudes in the division, maybe you came up short against them. Even if you did well against them, but you still lost, we kind of look at the record and go, okay. We figured out this guy's not going to be great. As if people don't learn and grow and develop. I mean, look at Charles Oliveira late in his career becoming a champ. It does happen.
Yeah, for sure. Next question this week comes to us from Zachary Redmond, who writes, after hearing Dana call Ed Herman a quote-unquote kid, I asked myself, does this man think a kid is an old goat rather than a baby goat? Love you both equally. And then I'll throw this one in here from Jurgen, because we're going to talk about this a little more. Subject line, can't we have nice, anything nice? He says, last night, had a very rare, super wholesome moment inside the octagon. Two vets, Zach Cummings and Ed Herman, have hanging up the gloves at the same time and sharing a beautiful moment of respect between each other, only to be immediately undone by Bill Allegio, seemingly making fun of guys for retiring and then making fun of Kansas City. It feels like the MMA world is allergic to wholesome moments. Much love from Jurgen. So first of all, let's just talk about Zach Cummings and Ed Herman, who did in fact pull off a thing that you very seldom see in fight sports. Both guys retired in the cage after their fight. Zach Cummings got the win by third round TKO. Zach Cummings, a Texas native, but a guy who fights out of Kansas City, had his daughter there with him, kind of jumped in his arms. He was very emotional, said he was going to hang it up before, but his daughter said she wanted to see him fight, so he had one more. Then he retires. Ed Herman gets on the mic. He says his kids are there seeing him fight for the first time. He gets pretty emotional, hanging it up after 17 years in the game. So let's just talk about that for a second, because that is something that rarely, if ever, happens. And it was legitimately a touching and wholesome moment in, as Jurgen points out here, a sport that almost never has legitimately touching and wholesome moments. So I thought it was great.
Yeah. Here's one thing I wonder. If you're the matchmakers and you make a fight where both guys retire afterwards, do you think that you did a good job? Or do you think that was weird? And because I understand, we kind of knew Zach Cummings was going to retire beforehand. I don't know if, I mean, Ed Herman, it's not exactly a surprise. He's been around for right. So damn long. But do you think, like, all right, that's because that's basically a seniors tour kind of thing that we've heard bandied about before. And did you do it on purpose or did you sort of just accidentally end up there? Because I much prefer this to the take the old guy, feed him to the young guy. Those are always sad. Make somebody go out on a terrible night on their retirement fight. But it also makes you wonder, like, okay, are you conscious of doing a kind of thing where it's like, okay, both these guys might be near the end here, and let's go ahead and have them just fight each other.
Yeah. I mean, from a humanistic standpoint, certainly it feels better to have two guys who are both about to retire fight each other. I think maybe from an am I doing my job as a matchmaker perspective, maybe you kind of wish you had gotten a little more out of these guys' final fight for the UFC. But frankly, who's worried about that? The UFC already is getting enough out of all this shit. So to see two guys fight each other, go out together, have this nice moment, it was awesome as far as I'm concerned. But then, Ben Folks, two fights later, your guy Bill Allgeo defeats TJ Brown, second round submission in a featherweight fight. He jumps on the mic, and I don't necessarily know if he meant to target Zach Cummings and Ed Herman personally here, but he does a little thing where he's like, takes his gloves off. And he's like, oh, I just wanted to say, I want to make this public official announcement. I'm never retiring. Essentially, you will have to drag my corpse out of here. That's fine. Then he goes full pro wrestling heel. I don't know if you saw this interview because it was on the prelims. He says, I would never retire in a dump like Kansas City. Basically, he goes full Rick Rude to say, shut up all you sweat hogs out there. I think he said he saw nothing but Uber Eats drivers and Bud Light drinkers. So you can take that for what it's worth in the crowd out there in Kansas City. He's trying to get booed, obviously, at that point. So I don't know how seriously we need to take anything from Bill Allgeo here. But then, Ben Folks, you had Clay Guida come out and take the gloves off after his fight against Rafa Garcia, the opening fight of the main card. And he kind of did a thing where he was like, I just want to trade gloves with this guy. I'm not thinking about retirement. And then Dana White came out at the post-fight press conference and said he was pissed about Clay Guida doing that, which, come on, man. What the fuck? Shut up. But this is a very weird night from start to finish with retirements and fake retirements and heel promos and everything else. It was very bizarre.
Yeah. I mean, afterwards, I saw Dana White being like, yeah, he just wanted to get air time so he could say happy birthday to somebody. So that's why he does like a fake retirement. And it's like, well, okay. I don't know how, like, I honestly, could I blame any UFC fighter who is like, let me do whatever I can to like actually get some time to say something on the camera? Especially after all the years that you've been in the damn sport, like Clay Guida, like, you know, Maybe at this, Clay Guida's been here for, it feels like, my entire natural life. So maybe he's earned the right to get a little bit of airtime, even if he loses. I don't know how mad you'd be about that. It does seem like when you view it in the context of, we had this nice moment, and then you guys had to go and ruin it immediately thereafter. Yeah, okay. That doesn't feel great. Because it's true that it's not like we are exactly overflowing in nice moments right. in this sport, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree. I don't think Clay Guida was trying to do it, but the Bill Algeo one was a little bit, that was a little odd. Although I guess we're out here trying to always say fighters need to be ready to have something to say in the post-fight interview. They need to have a little personality to make them stand out. And I guess going full Rick Rude is one way to do that. Next time he should have the wife of his opponent's face printed on the crotch of his trunks just to give us the full effect.
Yeah.
All right, that's going to do it for this week's listener mail. If you have a question, comment, or concern that you would like to air to the podcast in future weeks, you know how to do it. Go to the website, comainevent.com, and click the link in the top right-hand corner of the screen that says email the podcast. That'll get you in touch with us. Right now, we are going to go ahead and get started with round number one. Well, Ben, we got this message from our guy Patrick Milder over on Patreon. I just wanted to read it here as we get into this discussion of Max Holloway and his big win over Arnold Allen over the weekend. He says, Max dodging and returning punches on Calvin Kattar while talking shit to Kattar's corner and not even looking at Kattar is probably my favorite sequence in MMA, in all of MMA. However, last night he had yet another y'all must have forgot performance against a young top contender, at least mileage-wise. Additionally, he continues to have one of the most positive personalities in MMA. How can you not love Max Holloway? And I guess I would just say, I agree, man. I have no idea how you could not love Max Holloway. And frankly, I don't know if I know anybody who doesn't love Max Holloway. Max Holloway is just very easy to like in this sport, not only as an incredible tactician with incredible cardio who goes out there and puts a pace and a style on people that very few guys can hang with, and then jumps on the mic and is just an absolute gentleman, just a complete mensch, Max Holloway on the mic after this thing is over. And frankly, all the time. So I will throw my enthusiastic support behind, yes, Max Holloway is an incredible fighter, which I do agree that we were reminded of over the weekend, and seems like an unbelievable guy as well.
Yeah, and honestly, this is one of those fights, too, where it felt like, okay, they kind of tried to do this to him once already, be like, let's see if we can have one of these up-and-coming contenders beat up Max Holloway and therefore propel himself to a title shot. Because if you beat Max Holloway, then boom, you automatically deserve to fight for a title next. And didn't happen then when Calvin Kattar tried it. Then they go, okay, well, Arnold Allen, string of wins, seems like he's right there. There's one where it seems like, okay, he's got a good chance, right? He goes in there and honestly, I got to kind of feel for Arnold Allen here because there were some shots he hit Max Holloway with in the course of this fight where if you've seen Arnold Allen's previous fights at featherweight, you go, people go down when he lands those shots, you know, and yeah. he was landing them from the first round on, landed them several times. And usually that's the one that starts somebody down the path to the end. And Max Holloway acted like it didn't even happen. Just completely no-sold it every time he was clipped with something hard. And if you're all in Arnold Allen, you got to be like, this isn't how it usually goes. People usually seem bothered by this when I hit them with these shots. Max Holloway, not at all.
Not at all. And then there were some exciting, maybe nervous moments if you're a Max Holloway fan in the final round where Arnold Allen comes out and really tries to blitz him, especially in the final seconds of the fight. But I'm pretty sure Max Holloway kind of drops him right at the end of the fight where Arnold Allen is really, you know, he's getting aggressive. He's taking chances. He's leaving himself open in service of trying to end the fight, like a last minute come from behind victory. But Max Holloway fully drops him during that exchange. And then you got Dana White coming out being like, oh, Max Holloway or Arnold Allen should have fought that way from the beginning. And maybe he wins this fight. It's like, or maybe he gets knocked out. Because when he did start fighting that way, Max Holloway ended up getting the better of him in the end anyway. So I don't know. It's just like your opinion, man, when Dana White's out here saying this. I do want to say this about Max Holloway, though. He seemed to be bothered a little bit that he felt like he had been disrespected. I don't know by who, but by somebody, people talking about how he was too old, he was past his prime, and he is only really 31. So I think we got to put that in perspective. He also has a lot of mileage on the tires. He's got 31 fights at this point. But when you consider the career arc of Max Holloway, it is really incredible that he had these three losses in the beginning of his UFC career when he was really just a pup, honestly. Lost to Dustin Poirier, lost to Dennis Bermudez, lost to Conor McGregor. Way back, 2013 was that most recent loss. Since then, he hasn't lost to anybody except Dustin Poirier, again, when he tried to move up to lightweight to fight for the interim lightweight champion, and then three fights to Alexander Volkanovski. That is, those are the sum total of his losses. He has beat everyone else, which is, that's incredible, man, when you put it in that perspective.
Yeah, I do kind of wonder what you felt like you were hearing, because he was the betting favorite coming into this one, and I didn't hear anybody, even people who were saying, you know, picking Arnold Allen, which I thought was a pretty decent underdog pick for the odds they were offering. Nobody was saying it because they think Max Holloway is washed. I think that there is a little bit of a sense where we go, all right, one of these nights he's got to show up and start to look like a guy who has put a lot of miles on the odometer. Yeah. It's just got to happen, because you're right, chronologically, not that old, but you know, they were talking about something, how he surpassed like 7 hours of cage time or something ridiculous. And that in itself, you know, that's not nothing. And I think that he's helped himself a lot by changing the way he approaches training and sparring, especially, you know, he was the guy talking a few years ago about cutting way back on sparring and not doing a lot of sparring just because he was thinking about longevity and that you get to a certain point and you just don't need it as much anymore. And so I think he probably bought himself some extra time there, but I think it's reasonable for people to go, okay, sooner or later, it can't be that he only loses to the champ over and over and over again. Sooner or later, he's got to lose to somebody who is a future champ. You know, that's a reasonable stance to take, but it's also credit to Max Holloway for continuing to be able to say, like, I'm not there yet. Like, not there, and not really even looking close to there once you actually get him in the cage.
No, he still looks as good as ever, frankly. And maybe this is a case where a fighter just, you know, gets that kind of bunker mentality where it's like, it's me against the world. Maybe he is hyper attuned and hypersensitive to certain criticisms. I hadn't heard any leading up to this fight. And like I said, at the beginning of the round, everybody loves Max Holloway. So I can't imagine exactly what he heard that pissed him off. But the fact is, he is in kind of an odd place in the featherweight division, even now in the wake of this win over Arnold Allen. You've got Alexander Volkanovski on top as your champion, who, as I said, has already beat Max Holloway three times, and the most recent time wasn't very competitive. You've got Yair Rodriguez ranked number one, who is the interim champ, who Max Holloway just defeated in November of 2021. And then you got Max Holloway at number two, so aside from the champ and the interim champ, he's essentially the number one contender. And yet, it's going to be very hard to talk anyone into another fight between Max Holloway and Alexander Volkanovski. And so I've seen, you know, around the internet, some people calling him a gatekeeper. I don't necessarily know if I would call Max Holloway a gatekeeper. Yes, he has had these three fights against guys who are ranked lower than him, and Calvin Kattar and Arnold Allen in particular were up-and-coming prospects that were kind of getting a big test against Max Holloway. The other fight was against Yair Rodriguez, who, as I said a minute ago, he did beat, by the way. But like, if you're Max Holloway and you're ranked number two behind the interim champ and the real champ, there ain't nobody else for you to fight except guys behind you. And most of them, as we said at the beginning of the show, up-and-coming murderers in this featherweight division. So it's a strange spot for him to be in right now.
Yeah, it is. And I don't know what you would even advise for him to do, you know? Because I feel like the UFC is not going to be content to keep just running this same playbook over and over again. I think eventually they're going to be like, look, if we have somebody we think could turn into a future contender here, maybe the one thing we don't want to have him do is fight Max Holloway. Because
right.
you feel like he's just going to keep knocking off your guys, but not necessarily in a way that gives you anybody else like that. You, as long as Alexander Volkanovski is the champion, that you can justify putting in there again, because it feels like we've just seen it. We've seen it so many damn times. And, you know, I heard him talking afterwards. Like, you would think he's got to be sort of rooting for the title to change hands, just because that'll give him a totally fresh outlook as a potential contender, right? And instead he was saying, like, you know, hey, when those two guys fight for the title, you know, I'm just going to be a fan and get to sit back and watch it, and it seems like going to be a tough one for both of them. But you got to think in the back of his head, he's going to like, sure would be nice if Alexander Volkanovski lost, though.
Yeah.
Because then the slate gets wiped clean, kind of, for everybody.
I mean, I'm almost to the point where I'm going to make an argument that in Alexander Volkanovski and Max Holloway, the featherweight division has the two nicest people as the highest-ranked fighters, because they're both just absolute gentleman. Alexander Volkanovski came out and was very complimentary on social media about Max Holloway's performance here. So just a couple of just true gentlemen up at the top of that weight class. So yeah, it'll be very interesting to find out. I saw it floated around that maybe the winner of Ilia Topuria and Josh Emmett, who are going to fight at a fight night on June 17th, could make sense for Max Holloway. But again, like, you get into a weird situation where you're like, let's say it's Josh Emmett, who is the higher ranked guy in that pairing. Josh Emmett is ranked 5th. Ilia Topuria is ranked 9th. Let's say Josh Emmett wins and that fight plays out according to chalk. That's a pretty sweet fight. Josh Emmett is a banger. Like, I got no problem stylistically with watching Josh Emmett fight Max Holloway, but it's kind of a weird matchup for Max Holloway. Like, if you're Max Holloway and they call you up and they say, how about Josh Emmett, Max? Are you just champing at the bit to get that one? Are you like, yes, send me Josh Emmett immediately? Or are you for a second like, this is what it's come to?
Well, I guess you would ask yourself, what else do you think that they're going to offer you? Because it's probably not going to be another fight with Volkanovski, you know?
Yeah.
Like, and so if you're going to stay in that division, then that's kind of what you're looking at one way or another.
All right. Let's go ahead and we'll do Are You Fucking Kidding Me? And then we'll go on to round number two here. Ben, last week, in his first public statement about the matter, John Anik had the most John Anik possible response to Colby Covington's recent death threats against him. Threats on his life, mm-hmm. Ben Folks. And here is consummate professional John Anik being consummately professional when talking about absolute unbelievable jackass Colby Covington. Here's his quote from the MMA Hour. I think you could argue he crossed the line, but I never felt particularly threatened. More so, I felt support from Jorge Masvidal and Jamal Hill and a lot of other athletes, and I certainly appreciate that. I don't know that you need to inject anybody's kids into the equation, and there will come a point in time on Snapchat or somewhere else where my 11-year-old daughter is going to come across that clip, and there will be some explaining to do. But by and large, Colby and I are good. We have addressed it privately. We didn't talk, we messaged each other, and it's interesting to me because I've tried not to lean into it, right? I just leaned into it a little bit there for me. Ultimately, there were two parts of that navigation when he said what he said. First of all, what did I say that has upset the high-profile professional athlete? I've got to figure that out. Did I say something? Did I analytically go a little bit too far with my editorialization of the welterweight championship pecking order? So once I realized that it seems like his beef is really just that I gave Bilal Muhammad a platform and I didn't really say anything that sensational, then you can address what he said. And if I'm being honest, it was Colby in character for me. When I first saw the clip, I thought nothing of it, and then my phone got pretty noisy, and I thought more of it as the day went on. Are you fucking kidding me, man? We do not deserve this guy. We do not deserve, as I've said before, John Anik, who will sit here after Colby Covington threatened to make his children orphans simply because John Anik, who goes out of his way to be uncontroversial, who goes out of his way to be professional, basically the most professional guy in this whole sport. And then all he says is Bilal Muhammad maybe should get a title shot, and Colby Covington threatens his life, and this is John Anik's response. Are you fucking kidding me? We just don't deserve this guy, this absolute professional in John Anik. We ought to get someone out of the trash can to come commentate on this sport. Because John Anik he's too classy for this shit, man. You fucking kidding me?
You know what I hear there is a guy who knows he doesn't have to say Colby Covington is a colossal jackass because he knows everybody else will do it for him.
Yeah, he knows what we're all thinking. Yeah, but see, that's the mark of class right there. He understands that, and then he's going to come out with this somewhat professional statement where he just says, we're good. Colby and I are good now, he says.
Well, that and a dollar get you a cup of coffee, I guess. Jed, this week, are you fucking kidding me? Sorry, I jumped ahead there. Do you see this headline from MMA Fighting? Ex-UFC fighter Carl Roberson arrested, charged in connection to jewelry robbery.
Yeah, run the jewels. Carl Roberson is out here running the jewels, Ben.
Now, first of all, there's two things I love about this story. One is that you can just sort of imagine the reporting process that went into it in the story by Damon Martin here, because there's at one point, you know, we get the first two paragraphs about arrested for allegedly stealing over $200,000 of jewelry and valuables. And then the first quote in there from the detective in the case is, quote, "Yes, it would be the same person, Mr. Roberson. I'm familiar with his UFC career." So it's like, you got to call up just and be like, it is the fighter, right? Like, it's not just some guy with the same name who you guys arrested in the place where the guy lives. Like, it is the same guy. And the detective being like, oh yeah, no, I remember watching this guy fight. That's him. That's the guy. So I love that, because you could imagine the process where you'd be like, I better not fuck up and just write a whole story where it's the wrong Carl Roberson. So you got to ask there. But then I just want to read to you this part about how he came to be arrested. Roberson was arrested during a traffic stop in Neptune, New Jersey, after his vehicle was identified during the investigation in connection with the robbery. A search of the vehicle revealed a defaced 9mm handgun with an extended magazine, several packages of suspected crack cocaine, marijuana, and items related to the burglary that you're just driving around with in your car, that also contains crack cocaine and a defaced pistol with an extended magazine. You felt like you just had to have it all on you as you're driving around? You couldn't just put that stuff somewhere? Just needed it right there, like under the seat, just in case. Fucking kidding me?
You're fucking kidding me. All right, that's going to do it for round number one. We'll be right back. Round number two.
Chad, what are you doing on August 5th? Never mind, don't answer that, because I'm going to tell you what you're doing. You're going to be watching Jake Paul and Nate Diaz have a goddamn boxing match from Dallas, Texas. That's what you're going to be doing.
I was about to say, I know exactly where I'll be. I'll be coming over to your house to watch Nate Diaz box Jake Paul in a match at 185 pounds.
American Airlines Center. In Dallas, Texas, granddaddy of them all. We're going to go down there, 8 rounds, 10-ounce gloves, a DAZN pay-per-view. Just when I think I've reached a point in my life where I can forget that DAZN exists, you got to go ahead and throw this at me. Fine. But what's your current interest level in watching Nate Diaz and Jake Paul chuck them in the boxing ring?
I mean, I could sit here and try to pretend like I'm not going to watch it. But we already said we're going to watch it August 5th. I'm coming over to your house. We're watching the pay-per-view. We're going to drink a couple few cold ones. Maybe we'll even turn the webcam on so that the rest of the beloved patrons of the co-main event can watch it along with us. So is my interest that high? Not particularly, but again, I'm not going to front like I'm going to let the thing pass without laying eyeballs on it. Here's the thing, though, Ben, and please allow me to wish Nate Diaz a slightly belated happy birthday, because he turned 38 years old yesterday. So, here you've got 38-year-old former MMA fighter Nate Diaz, who historically has done his best, most competitive work in the 155-pound division. He is, for the most part, a natural lightweight who has made some appearances at 170 pounds because he had a gentleman's agreement with Conor McGregor not to cut no weight. And now he's going to box Jake Paul in a match at 185 pounds. I have to say, this feels a lot like previous Jake Paul boxing matches against MMA fighters, with perhaps the one exception that Nate Diaz is actually a striker, you know? He actually does some boxing. So there's that. He's got that going for him, I guess.
Well, it does seem like at least this is Jake Paul sort of reverting to form in some ways, in that, like we said before, we felt like the Tommy Fury thing was going to basically prove that his shit doesn't work on boxing people nearly as well as it works on MMA people.
And by his shit, do you mean his actual boxing? Because it didn't work against Tommy Fumbles either.
Yeah, I mean, that was the first fight that actually didn't go his way. So you could argue that just the actual in-ring stuff, but also the sales pitch, doesn't work on boxing fans the same way it does on MMA people. And so here again, you're basically going like, okay, you're going to pick a beloved MMA person, and you're also going to pick them at a time and a weight, essentially, where we feel like that is not to that guy's advantage. And you might fuck around and be able to beat this person at this particular point, and we hate it. We hate it so much that it makes us so mad we got to see it.
We hate it so much we absolutely must watch.
We just cannot miss it. And so I guess this is sort of a test to see, does that still work? Can you go back to that well? Because all the ingredients are still there. But it has been a game of sort of declining returns for Jake Paul in every possible way. He seems like, you know, as much as we might criticize him as going for a quick cash grab, with all this stuff, he does seem like he's kind of about that life. Like he really wants to continue doing this and takes it pretty seriously. And yet it also seems like, did you go around and be like, okay, it's not enough just to pick on old guys who it makes you mad to think that I might win and I don't deserve to have a win over Anderson Silva and shit like that. Do you need somebody who is going to be enough of a personality to help you get in there on the sales pitch? Because that is one thing he hasn't really had that much, is somebody who could carry that part of the load if they want to quite as much. And that there's also a part of us, I think, as MMA fans, that don't we want to see Nate Diaz get paid? Don't we want to see Nate Diaz break free of the UFC after all he went through just to try to get out of that contract and be able to go over and make some money boxing? Like, more so than we felt about anybody else, I think, with Nate Diaz going over to fight Jake Paul, there's a part of us that goes, well, good for you, man. I hope that it actually makes a really good payday for you.
Yeah, if there's an argument to be made that we should pay the money to watch the pay-per-view where Nate Diaz fights Jake Paul in a 185-pound boxing match, it's probably that in our hopes that some of that money will wind up in the pocket of Nathan Donald Diaz, because it's like Max Holloway. We all love this guy. We all want to see him do well. He deserves to make a shitload of money, and I hope he does. But I would ask an additional question to that, and that is, you know, you asked me a minute ago, what's my level of interest? And I said, yeah, I'm going to watch it, but I think it is more relevant to ask what the general level of interest among combat sports, boxing people, and MMA people will be around this fight. Because you and I talked about months ago now that we thought it was savvy of Jake Paul to sign this deal with the PFL, because it felt in some ways like he had played out the string with his boxing career and that he was starting to see, as you said, diminishing returns with that. And we thought, hey, here's the thing that could breathe some new life into Jake Paul's fighting career if he actually does come over and engage in an MMA fight. And we had that conversation before he lost to Tommy Fumbles. And it kind of seemed like Jake Paul lost to Tommy Fumbles in a damn vacuum. It felt like almost no one cared about it. No one watched it. Nobody saw it. He lost by what, majority decision or something? And we just kind of let it slip like water off a duck's back into the past and never mentioned it again. So now here he is reverting to the original plan, maybe trying to troll MMA fans as he has done so masterfully. And he's probably doing it against the right guy in Nick Diaz, who we knew was going to try to fight a big money fight after leaving the UFC and is a guy who, as you said, depending on his mood on any given day, can do some stuff to sell this fight if he wants to. But my question is, are people going to tune in to watch it? Because we've already seen Jake Paul run this same game on us a number of times, and the Tommy Fury fight seemed to make absolutely no waves at all. Is getting Nate Diaz to come in on this thing the secret to the success? Are they going to crank back up the Jake Paul money-making machine with this fight?
I mean, I expect them to do better. I don't know if the whole thing is necessarily something that you can keep doing indefinitely, because it seems like you're leaning a lot on novelty with the Jake Paul thing, and you have to ramp it up in some ways, but there's only so much realistically that you can do there, because it's like you're not going to be fighting these big-time championship boxers. Like, you're just not. Like, that's the bad idea. And I feel like there's at least some people around him who will tell him that. So you do need somebody like Nate Diaz. And honestly, for like what the choices are out there right now, Nate Diaz is probably the absolute best choice that you can come up with. What I wonder is, remember we were talking about the PFL was saying, like, absolutely, you'll see Jake Paul in the cage this year. Gonna have an MMA fight this year. So this shit is set for August. Gotta think that he's not gonna have the MMA fight before then. Right? You got to be going to be focused on having this boxing match. And then that's going to leave you basically with, you know, 4 months left in the year to make that promise come true and turn right around after the boxing match, get ready for an MMA fight. When you hear that we're scheduling this thing for early August, does it make you feel maybe less confident that the Jake Paul will fight MMA in PFL this year? Do you feel like that guarantee just got a little less rock solid?
Well, I think he walked it back pretty much right after the PFL said that. I thought that Jake Paul said something to the effect of maybe 2024. He may have even said 2025. I don't know. I don't have it in front of me at this moment, but I feel like he hit the brakes a little bit on that PFL statement. So, you know, if he fights Nate Diaz in August, it's slim to none, I would think, that he makes it to the PFL by the end of the year. But now maybe we're surprised. Maybe he shocks us with his ability to come cross over to MMA.
What do you think happens first? Jake Paul fights MMA in the PFL cage, or John Jones and his longtime fiance finally get that wedding venue they've been trying to book, finally make it official?
Oh my God. I don't feel comfortable with it. I'm letting it pass. I won't put any money on that at all. I mean, I guess like if Jake Paul fights any time in the next 10 years, he would at least beat the record. It'd be a shorter time span for sure.
A shorter engagement. Yeah.
All right. That's going to do it for round number two. We'll be right back with round number three. Well, Ben, you know heavyweight champion John Jones has that silly little guy energy.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when he's on the internet just fucking around after 7 p.m. You know he's got that silly little guy energy. So here he is, April 15th, 9:15 p.m. on the Twitter machine. How cool would it be to spend my retirement fight dominating the greatest heavyweight of all time in my home state at Madison Square Garden? So John Jones, just gonna tease us a little bit with a possible retirement as well as a fight against Stipe Miocic at MSG. Now, we've had Dana White come out after that. John Jones and Stipe Miocic have been going back and forth on the socials, as a couple of fighters are apt to do. We've had Dana White come out and basically say, it's fine. Everything's fine. We're on track. We're going to get these guys in the cage at some point, somewhere. They will fight each other. Maybe it's November at Madison Square Garden. Who knows? Are we much ado about nothing here? Is John Jones just breaking out with the SLG energy and just tweaking us a little bit here?
I mean, in all the years that we were between when he went from relinquishing his light heavyweight title to when we finally saw him fight a heavyweight, how many times did he do some shit like this? Jump on Twitter, tease some shit like it was right around the corner. I'm say at least half a dozen times. Right?
Yeah, a lot.
Like, so it's not like that would be totally out of the question for him. It also, though, does seem like if we're going to get something on the books here, let's go ahead and do it. You know? If you give Jon Jones too much idle time between fights, you know what happens. It is nothing good. You know? There's a direct link between number of establishments he's going to get himself 86th from and how much time you give him with nothing to do, time off between fights. Like, let's go ahead, strike while the iron's hot. While we were just reminded that Jon Jones, still really good fighter, he goes out there, easily dispatches Ciryl Gane. And honestly, you know, having him fight Stipe, even if Stipe seems like he's kind of just hanging on at this point for one more payday, I'd watch that fight. Book that shit. Book it now before you lose the chance to book it at all, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, at first we were saying International Fight Week maybe in July for this thing, and then we kind of pushed it back, and now we're talking about November, maybe Madison Square Garden. So you're right. I think, like, we do need to get it on the books if we're intent on doing it. Stipe is not getting any younger. He's, you know, in between these fights here, he hasn't necessarily seemed like it was... He was banging down the door to come back. It didn't seem like he was that hot after getting another fight here. So if he's going to come in and fight Jon Jones, another thing that we might want to think about is not giving Stipe Miocic much time to get much older and continue to think about how long he wants to do this thing. How anticlimactic would it be, though, for Jon Jones to spend all of this time in a contract holdout or whatever it was to get there, to move up to heavyweight, to come in, to beat Ciryl Gane without breaking a sweat, to make it look as easy as possible. Then he rolls into a fight with Stipe Miocic. Let's say he beats him. How anticlimactic would it be if Jon Jones actually walked away after that win? Wouldn't we kind of be like, really? We did all this. We all got dressed up for nothing. We did all this shit in the heavyweight division, and now we're basically back to square one. But this time, maybe without Francis Ngannou, without Jon Jones, and quite possibly without Stipe Miocic, where would we even be at that point?
Yeah, I could see that point, obviously, but here's my big prediction. You ready for this? When it comes to Jon Jones is not going to be one of these fighters who retires once, and that's it. I don't think so. I think Jon Jones is going to be one of those fighters who maybe believes it the first time that he's going to tell us he's retired, but then is going to quickly find that he needs this in his life and still wants to be Jon Jones, that guy. And I think we're in for anywhere from two to four retirements from Jon Jones in the future. He's going to be here a while, whether he really thinks he wants to be that long or not. Like, when I hear a concern, like, whoa, what if he shows up, beats an old Stipe, we waited all this time for this shit for him to beat a guy with no ground game, beat a guy who's over the hill, and then say, peace out, I'm going home, and won't it be a little bit anticlimactic? Sure, but then he'll be back 9 months to a year and a half later, just because he won't know what else to do with himself. So I'm not worried about that part of it.
Is what you're telling me right now that Ben Foulkes understands Jon Jones better than Jon Jones understands himself? Is that what we're saying here?
I'm saying we've had a chance to get to know this guy, right? Just sort of in the public eye in MMA for a long time. What do you see Jon Jones doing? Retiring and just getting super into like making dollhouse furniture? No. Jon Jones loves being Jon Jones, that guy. You know, that top dog. And if you go just like into private life, essentially, you're not going to have that. He's going to miss that. And so I think that even if Jon Jones told himself, okay, this is a good endpoint, I got enough money, all that stuff, I'm going home now, thanks for all the cheese, I think once he gets home, he will get bored. He will miss that ego boost of being the top guy. You know how quickly the MMA world moves on, even if they're saying it about you. Because you know what would happen if you beat Stipe? People would be like, okay, Jon Jones the GOAT now. You know, no one can argue with it. Jon Jones belts in two weight classes, really never lost a fight, and cleaned out light heavyweight, and then beat the guy who, by kind of default, we had regarded as the greatest UFC heavyweight champ in history, and then walked out on top. And we would all go, yay, and that would last like a week, maybe 2 weeks. And then we'd move on. Because fight sports, like, we just are not that great at memorializing and remembering even our own history. The UFC is not certainly not going to help you do it, not for long anyway, not unless it's, you know, once a year at like a Hall of Fame ceremony. And even then they'll be scared to bring you to Vegas. And so this, they'll be promoting the next thing. Fans will be thinking about the next thing. The churn rate of fans is pretty high compared to other sports. So, you know, a couple years will go by and people will be like, John Jones, who? Like, hey, he won't be able to stand that. He will have to come back and remind you who he is. There's no way. There's no way we see John Jones fight Stipe Miocic and that's it. Ain't no way.
Well, no one has ever charged him with being the most self-aware person on the planet. You telling me you don't think John Jones can turn the spare bedroom into like a painting studio and just go in there and do landscapes and the occasional portrait like George W. Bush?
I wish you would. I want to believe in that future. I want to believe in the one where John Jones is like, you know what? I got really into fly fishing. Just really make my own flies and all that stuff. Like, it's really great. It's super relaxing. You guys should try it. Out there on a pair of hip waders. Just him and the breeze blowing on his face. I'd love to think that that's the reality you could end up with. I don't believe it.
Yeah.
Not for a second.
Well, you know what would bother John Jones the most, and that is after he walked away and the UFC put the belt on somebody else. That would be the thing that he probably wouldn't be able to stay off Twitter when thinking about. And to that end, coming up this weekend, over at the Apex, Las Vegas, Nevada, fight night event number 80.
200, yeah, okay.
Oh, it's 222. UFC Fight Night, yes! 222. It's UFC on ESPN plus 80 or UFC Vegas 71. So we're just making up numbers at this point now. But your heavyweight
There's
main
event.
There's
four different names for this thing on Wikipedia. It's just the first line of Wikipedia. UFC Fight Night, Pavlovich versus Blades. UFC Fight Night, 222. UFC on ESPN plus 80. And UFC Vegas 71. What the fuck? That's too many names for a throwaway fight night event.
Even one name is too much for this one. Your heavyweight main event, Sergey Pavlovich against Curtis Blaydes. And honestly, dude, if John Jones walked away and if Stipe Miocic walked away, this is probably close to what you would be looking at for a new UFC heavyweight title fight. It would be something like Sergey Pavlovich against Curtis Blaydes. So that puts some things in perspective, doesn't it?
It does. It does. And if you're Curtis Blaydes, you're probably thinking like, yeah, go ahead, walk away. Farewell. I've been waiting for the division to kind of clear out. And, you know, I was a little bit surprised when I looked at the betting odds for this one because Curtis Blaydes comes in as a slight favorite. Again, and like,
okay,
you know, not saying that Curtis Blaydes isn't good or anything, but we just saw Sergey Vladimirovich Pavlovich go in there and absolutely wreck Tai Tuivasa in the last one, you know, the first minute knockout. Before that, absolutely wreck Derek Lewis. And then, you know, beat Shamil Abdurakhimov and Maurice Green, Marcelo Golm. Like, that's a guy riding a 5-fight winning streak of first round knockout victories. And especially that Tai Tuivasa one, that man looks scary.
Yeah.
That guy looked like, okay. I mean, honestly, if you're talking about what you could be looking at in a post-Stipe, post-John Jones heavyweight era, don't you think it's probably some shit like Sergey Pavlovich versus Tom Aspinall? Like, looks like where we're kind of headed as far as, like, next generation of UFC heavyweights. I don't know. Like, it seems like maybe for the UFC, the hope would be, let's put him up against Curtis Blaydes, a guy who's kind of always been hanging around there near top contender status. And a guy will offer you a different kind of test than Derek Lewis and Tai Tuivasa, certainly. But if Sergey Pavlovich goes out there and knocks him out, then he's kind of the guy.
Yeah, but let's not shortchange the Miami area private detective Curtis Blaydes. He's 7-1 in his last 8. The only people he has ever lost to are Francis Ngannou twice, and he got knocked out by Derek Lewis back in February of 2021. Aside from that, he has beat everybody that he has faced. So I agree. You know, despite the fact that this goes down on a fairly anonymous fight night event, just some Saturday in the middle of April, the winner of this thing shapes up as their number one contender, really, honestly, in the heavyweight division, unless you're going to use your new WWE merger to go fill up a table in front of Brock Lesnar with money. This is probably your number one contender. And honestly, if John, let's say John Jones doesn't walk away, I think both of these guys pose a significant threat to the John Jones at heavyweight era, because these are two bad dudes, man, in Curtis Blaydes and Sergey Pavlovich.
Yeah, and I think especially if we see Sergey Pavlovich in a fight where he has to fend off a little bit of Curtis Blaydes' wrestling, and then but then could still get his hands going and score a knockout, then maybe that would be the kind of performance where we'd be like, okay, here's a big heavyweight who's athletic, who can hit, but who won't just be easily taken down and choked the way Cyril Gane was.
If he fends off the takedowns of Curtis Blaydes, I think John Jones got problems. I think he's got some trouble. So we'll see what happens. All right, Ben, let's do Just Saying Stuff, and then we will get out of here for this week. Ben, what is your Just Saying Stuff?
Well, Chad, this week I'm choosing to direct my Just Saying Stuff to you personally.
Oh, wow. Okay, I did not expect this.
To you?
Is it going to be an attack? Is it a proposal? What is it?
I understand that you are new to Instagram. I understand.
Yeah, the grams.
Took you a while to come around, create an account over there, start posting pictures every once in a while, join the community a little bit. We're glad to have you, frankly. Now, sometimes I will send you a funny reel or video or post or something that I have seen.
Hold on.
Shut up and let me talk.
I just want to say by sometimes you mean like three times a day.
Twice a day.
That's just that's
two to saying. Three times a day. I will send you a hilarious thing that I think you will enjoy. That I see it and I think of you. I think, you know who would like this, who would be amused by this? Chad Dundas, my good friend. My friend and business partner, at this point, my heterosexual life partner, Chad Dundas will enjoy this. It'll bring a smile to his face, maybe brighten his goddamn day. And so I hit the little arrow thing. I send it off to you. A couple hours go by. I'll look at my DMs. It'll say seen 45 minutes ago. So I'm just saying, Chad, maybe you don't understand the Instagram etiquette because you're new here.
Okay.
You're supposed to at least acknowledge that you received, watched, and enjoyed it. You know? You don't have to do it all the time, maybe, but just give me a little heart. Just double tap it. Give me a little heart to be like, I saw this. Maybe, if you really enjoyed it, give me a little crying, laughing emoji in response. Something to be like, yes, we are in conversation, you and I. I appreciate that you thought of me, that you wanted to brighten my day with this funny reel about 1990s NBA or something. Whatever it is, just be like, I see you. I appreciate you. Thank you for being in my life. Thank you for being a friend. Honestly, I'm just saying, would it be so hard? Is it so hard to hit the little double tap? Just give me a double tap, Chad. That's all I'm saying.
Okay. Yeah.
I'm going to cut you off. If you don't start giving me a double tap, I'm going to cut you the fuck off. I'm unfollowing. I might even block you. You've been warned. I'm just saying.
Okay. You're just saying stuff this week. To close out our podcast, listened to by tens of thousands of people every week, is that I occasionally leave you on scene.
You always leave me on scene.
I don't always. I respond sometimes.
Man, it's a rare fucking day when Chad, you just, it's like sending funny reels to my dad or something where he's just going to be like, yes, no, I saw it. Didn't feel the need to say anything about it to acknowledge that it even happened. Look at this shit. Okay. Scene yesterday. Before that, sent you this funny one where this guy tries to knock out Francis Ngannou using Davidson Figueiredo on the UFC video game. Nothing. Fucking
that
got
was a good
bupkis
one.
Back.
That was
I know it was a good one. One. You didn't say shit about it. Before that, had a sweet Matt and Jeff Hardy pro wrestling one. That was pretty dope, too. Before that, hilarious Mandalorian one. There ain't shit coming back from any of these, man. Bullshit.
Okay. I'll tap the heart from now on. I'm
you
sorry.
Better tap the fucking heart.
I'm sorry. I had to just say stuff, but I'm not going to do it. I can't do it. I can't follow that. I can't follow that. I got tears coming out of my eyes. That's it. We're done. That's going to be the end of the Co-Main Event podcast this week and maybe forever. I don't know. Be sure to check us out over on Patreon. We'll be over there all week doing the fresh content. You can hear Ben Folks critique my various social media strategies over there as well.
Thanks for
listening, everybody. We hope to see you on Patreon. As for right now, we're done. We are through. We are out. I'm sorry. That's the only thing I can say. I'm sorry. I always watch them. I do enjoy them. I always feel like when someone just taps the heart, don't you feel like it's a little bit kind of, it's like when you send somebody a text and now you can just respond like with the thumbs up. When someone lays the thumbs up on your text, aren't you kind
of like, yeah, just fuck you. You know what? Like, if
you hate
me. Might
as well be a middle finger, right?
If you hate me, just say so. Just fucking say so. Go ahead and punch me in the face instead of giving me that thumbs up. Get out of here.
So, I mean, I just didn't want to offend you, but tapping the heart, giving you the heart emoji, and here it seems like, unbeknownst to me, that's exactly what I've done, and I didn't
exactly
know, I didn't mean
done.
To.
Just exactly what you've done.
Here's the thing. I'm a 45-year-old man trying to make my way on the grams. I don't totally know what I'm doing, and so from now on, I will know that I have to respond to your DMs. Do I also have to respond to the busty ladies who are constantly messaging me on there? Because it happens like...